When I was a developer, you had these periods where you entered flow and you could like lose track of time, and you were like achieving something and making something, and you just felt so happy.
That's Jeremy Brown, Chief Product and Technology Officer at Traveldo, Expedia Group.
If you think about trying to navigate through a forest, they're the person that climbs up the tree and looks out over the forest and points you in the direction where you need to go. I think I would expect leaders to have a clear vision of where we are going, and perhaps more importantly, explaining why we're going in that direction.
Jeremy Brown, illustrating what being a leader means to him. Leadership and teamwork are what we explore in this episode of Le Podcast on Emerging Leadership. The podcast equips you to unlock the power of emerging leadership. Each episode turns insight into actions that you can use straight away to build momentum and create lasting change from yourself to your team, from your team to other teams, and from other teams to the entire organization. I'm your host, Alexis Monville, and I believe in the ability of people and teams to find better ways to increase their impact and satisfaction. Let's jump right into the conversation with Jeremy to learn more about what it means. Hey, Jeremy, thank you for joining the podcast. Can you tell us a little bit more about you and your background?
Hey, Alexi. Oh, it's great to be here. So, yeah, a little bit about me. I'm a Jeremy. I'm Irish, actually half Irish, half Finnish. I live in Paris, where I've been here for about 5 years. Currently, I guess like my background, I'm an engineer. That's been my history. But I think I have also like probably one of the most, I think, fairly diverse backgrounds for someone in my position, because while I've worked as an engineer on low-level things like the operating system of mobile phones, I've worked as a consultant and doing very large-scale Java implementations. I worked in pre-sales. I've worked in sales as an actual salesperson. I, with a friend, started a startup incubator in Cameroon, of all places, and helped local entrepreneurs start tech businesses in Cameroon like 10 years ago. So it was pretty crazy. Yeah, so like really lots of different things. I would say like my backgrounds and my passion is about building products and the teams and the systems that build those products. I think that's really my passion and what everything has led me to today.
So today you are Chief Product and Technology Officer at Traveldo, right?
Yes. Yes.
So it directly connects to your passion of building products?
Exactly. Yeah, and building products, and you know, Traveldo is a subsidiary of Expedia. We've been changing how we work as well. I mean, and I think that the majority of my work has been a little bit less on the product and actually more on how we build the product and how can we change how we do that that has a material impact on our customers and our users.
So of course, as soon as we said travel in the current context, I need to ask you a question about how that current situation, that pandemic, is affecting your business and the way you work.
Yeah, Alexi, this past year has been, I think, one of the hardest that I've personally experienced on multiple levels. You know, obviously, like everybody else, you know, just in the personal level, the pandemic clearly had an effect on our personal lives. And we have a small child at home. He's less than two. And we were in March, we were all at home and there was no crèche, and we were busy juggling him and trying to get on with work. But of course, more than that, you know, our business is a travel and expense SaaS business. And we went from, you know, people booking travel, you know, where we were doing millions of transactions in a year to, you know, like 80, 90% down on the previous year. So from a business perspective, we've had, I would say, an extreme shock to the system. There have been a lot of implications to us as a company and the product team. We've had to let go of our contractors that we had. We've had to, you know, half of our team are contractors based in India, and we had to significantly downsize that team as well. And the people cost for us has been really high, not only for you know, the people that we had to let go. In contractors, I really saw them as our own staff. But then for the people who are still here with us, you know, they've had to, not only like everybody else, had to make a transition from being, you know, co-located in two different offices, one office in Paris and one office in India. But they've also had, you know, the personal challenges. And then, you know, that I think when you're in one of the companies that's heavily affected by the pandemic, it adds an extra stress and a worry for the staff compared to one of the companies where they're benefiting from the current situation, because there are winners and losers right now. We're definitely a loser. So it's been hard. Yeah. That's how I'll summarize it. It's been a tough year. Yeah.
I can hear that. And it's of course, always difficult to imagine what people can feel about it. I understand that you're focused on, of course, the business is impacted, but that's the big people cost. And I'm sure that if you see people around you let go, it's always affecting you. You cannot just be satisfied of being lucky and still having a job. That's not the way it works. Of course, it's really hard. So yeah, it's difficult to go to the next question, right?
Well, all I would say is that that this has been, I think, a test for all of us, for myself. While it's really tough, I would say that the growth in yourself, in hard times, you grow more, like just like you prune plants, you know, to help them grow in the next growing season. I feel like the one thing that this has done for me is it's helped me grow as a leader. It's very easy being a leader when everything's great. It's much harder being a leader when things are not great. And it's even harder when you don't control a lot of the things that make it not great. I don't just speak, you know, personally on from myself. I speak for like my leadership team and what they've had to handle. And, you know, I would also add that like we have, you know, dealing with customers who are also many of them struggling, because I would say that a large part of our business is with travel agencies. They've been even more heavily impacted than ourselves. We've been fairly fortunate. We've kept most of our staff from being furloughed so that we can continue to build the product. A lot of our partners that we do business with, they're not in the same situation. So it's been an interesting learning and growing experience, not one that you would choose to ever go through. But I'll take it, because first of all, you don't have a choice. But secondly, I do see the positive growth in myself and the others around me as well through all of this.
That's really bring me to the next question about what does being a leader mean to you?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about this question when you sent me some of the questions you might ask beforehand. And I was wondering, actually, did what leader means change because of this experience as well? And I would say, first of all, I don't know if it has. For me, being a leader, there's a couple parts to this. I believe that there's a big difference between leaders and managers. And I believe that a leader is definitely someone who's kind of, if you think about trying to navigate through a forest, they're the person that climbs up the tree and looks out over the forest and points you in the direction where you need to go. They have I would expect leaders to have a clear vision of where we are going, and perhaps more importantly, explaining why we're going in that direction. And really then, I think the second part of leadership for me is really about being a human being. I always believe this very strongly, and I think it's become more important through the pandemic and managing things. But yeah, I really believe that not being disconnected from people, but really showing, you know, you're not perfect, and not painting a perfect picture of yourself, being human and being like looking into seeing how are your people doing, and like coming alongside them if you can, and like encouraging them to not, you know, we've had people that have overworked. I mean, like a lot of people, I guess, you know, they're at home and there's no, you know, the lines blur between work and home, and you can really start to see the stress build. And I think the two parts to all of this is kind of showing that you yourself are having the same struggles as everybody else, because I think that, you know, that's important. Certainly, I'm not the kind of person who'd want to hide that. And secondly, providing space for people to manage the extra complexity that everybody is currently managing. So I guess, yeah, for me, that leadership is about direction and more importantly, explaining why that direction and is important. And secondly, being human. And the one thing I've learned in my journey, and I can say I'm far from perfect, but the one thing where I've had breakthroughs as a leader is where I've gotten to know myself more. The more self-aware I become and the journey I progress on that journey, the better a leader I become as well. So yeah, it's this leadership for me.
It's very inspiring. Being self-aware, being human, that's not the first thing I hear all times. And I think it's really important. And I feel that the people around me are more and more aware of that. And I am more and more ready to be themselves and to be a real person in their work environment. And I see that as really a positive evolution of the world.
I agree. It's a world I want to be part of. I don't know, Alexei, but just a quick comment on this, but I do think as work changes, creativity and collaboration are actually the things that we want to encourage in the workplace in order to really bring value to the businesses that we work in. I think that this is the kind of leadership that people respond best to, to help people be inspired to bring their best and do their best. And so for me, it kind of goes together with the nature of work changing. I think the nature of leadership has to change a little bit too.
I think the kind of leader that was more kind of a manager that was showing the artifact of success in the could be the car, the big watch, or the nice clothes and the inspiring respect or things like that. That's probably gone. That's not the kind of leader people are ready to follow now and wants to work with now. It's interesting that shift that is happening.
Yeah, and because we're not all in the office anymore, it's harder to flex like that. It's just you with in your home with a camera. You can't flex in that same way, that I don't know. Yeah, it's different. When you're in the office, there's all sorts of power that happens that kind of, it changes clearly, but, the bad micromanagers come out still. But yeah, I think it's this new way of distributed work doesn't really facilitate people to do that either.
Speaking of offices, I remember a passionate conversation with you about gathering, about how to assemble a team in a space and how to design the space to make the collaboration happen. Well, we discussed a lot of that. I assume that your way of working changed, of course, from co-located, you said that, to fully remote. How you change those things? How you change your way of working to still be able to foster that creativity and that collaboration you were mentioning?
Yeah. So I'm fortunate enough, at least to have, when I worked at Red Hat before, Red Hat's kind of, I would say, pretty good with remote work. And a lot of, I would say a large percentage of people who work there were kind of remote workers. And certainly I was, though I saw my team face to face a lot and we had a lot of FaceTime. We just definitely haven't got that now. But here in Traveldo, we had basically a team co-located in the office in Paris with a kind of a really office first culture. And the same thing in Kochi in South India, in Kerala. And it was a pretty sharp change to not be in the office anymore. And I would say that the first phase of our transition was kind of just replicating the way that we worked in the office, but with a video instead of face to face. And we heavily used, we were using Slack already, but I think we went a bit even more into Slack. And I think that was the first sort of transition out. And then, we used the retrospective in the team, probably not as, we say, everyone says they use retros. We do use retros. I would say it would be nice if we used them more at the same time. But we tried to learn. And what we realized was, first of all, I started to hear in my skip level conversations, especially with the tech leads, that they were in a lot of meetings and actually not able to code that much. And I mean, we still have that problem, today, but I think we're a little bit better than when we first left the office. We started to change the way we communicated. We started intentionally moving more and more things to asynchronous. I think I would say that if you looked at my calendar a few weeks after we had moved out of the office, and then you look at my calendar now, you know, almost a year later, it's very different. We've definitely moved basically all of our status reporting to asynchronous. We've reduced the amount of time we spend in meetings. We've intentionally cut repeatedly meetings and asked why we're doing that. And we're moving more and more of what we do to even shorter form meetings. So that's, I think meetings is like one area where we've actually also, we had a release meeting and we, you know, had people like getting around at lunchtime and spending 15 minutes talking about the next release. And then that release meeting moved to like a video call. And now today it's moved to a Slack workflow. So, you know, it's fully asynchronous. And I think it's incremental changes that we're moving, and we're moving in this continuum towards more and more written and asynchronous. And we're not there yet. Like, I wouldn't say, you know, like you look at companies like Automattic, you know, the company that makes WordPress and so on, they're very well known for how they work. We're not there yet, but we're definitely nudged towards them in how we do things, which is a very positive thing. Certainly, we've seen while our team size has reduced, productivity overall has actually increased for all of us. I think that we've surveyed our staff and we have a healthy percentage, like 20-30% staff who would like to stay remote and actually would like to even leave Paris. And we have another percentage of people who would, the majority, the rest would say, I like to go to the office, but I don't want to be there 5 days a week, which is what we had before, where, you know, we had like one or two people that worked 2 days a week remote and they were the exception. So we're really moving in a different way.
Have you noticed, of course, when we speak about companies like Automattic or Basecamp that are really working with people fully remote and that are putting a lot of attention to written communication and asynchronous communication, they are saying that enables people that are usually more shy or more introverted to contribute better, and that enables the better thinking. Have you noticed a change in the contribution of people? Have you noticed that some people were able to contribute more, or what do you think?
Yeah. I will say the extroverts still are the most chatty people on Slack. The personality still comes through. I think we've seen that nudging. I don't think we're like at that stage of, you know, where Automattic are. But I do think that the one thing I will say is video calls or kind of chat and email and all are more inclusive if you operate using them differently. Certainly, we've intentionally adopted a number of different behaviors. Just to give you some examples, like in video calls, we've introduced hand signals to say, I agree or I disagree. We've introduced kind of like a hand signal to say, I'd like to talk. We've tried to intentionally ask people who are not, we do try to intentionally ask people who are not talking to say, hey, I see you didn't really comment here. Have you got something to say? And I've always found that that question generates like the most powerful insight in the meeting. So, you know, we've definitely, through the retros and stuff, introduced more behaviors like that. And I don't think it's as easy to do that in real life because definitely the extroverts dominate that much more. And you kind of, but you do sense the body language in a room, but I still think that this is still pretty inclusive, and it's definitely, even through this, we've become more inclusive. Maybe if we go back to the office, we'll also have learned from that and still be like that. But it seems a bit weird to hold your hand up in a room than to stick your thumbs up in a room. Whereas on a video call, that feels like now like natural. So I don't know.
Yeah, I remember the first time I had a workshop using Sociocracy or using the core protocols, and you are asked to make hand signals in a meeting room and not to talk, to signify your agreement to a proposal that is made. And it's really odd. It sounds counterintuitive, but at the third round of the table, going around the table, it starts to become more interesting because you are already focused on what people are saying. And you look around, you see the hand signal, you see that suddenly you catch the opinion of people that you would have probably not even noticed before. It creates something different. So I think it's hard to put that in to put in place in a room, in a physical environment. Interestingly, I'm curious about what will happen when we are coming back, once we learned those things remotely.
Yeah, me too. It'll be, well, I tell you, the one thing that I'm looking forward to when we can like see each other is to see each other. we do have like little coffee conversations, and we realized at times that some of the middle management weren't getting more and more disconnected in different departments, and they have like regular coffee hours together, which has really worked out well. But yeah, I think like for me, the hybrid approach where you charge up your like face-to-face time and you get that small talk and stuff, I think is super important. And I think even where teams are fully remote in the future, certainly on my side, I intend to have like regular, you know, face-to-face time for those teams, because I think it's important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely agree. And the company like Automatic and Basecamp, they have FaceTime. They have events when they gather all together. So that's there's a need for that, definitely. We spoke about leadership and what it means. What do you look up to as a leader? Where are you inspired from?
There's been a couple different books I've read from different leaders that have inspired me, and maybe even more than like nudge is maybe too weak a word, like really kicked, you know, me in the direction. And I would say David Marquet and, Turn the Ship Around has definitely altered the course of how I try to be a leader. I would say that Simon Sinek has really transformed how I like go into work, start with why, and a lot of the thinking that he puts into work. And I would say that he's certainly inspired what I feel is like my personal purpose for what I want to achieve and how I turn up in work. So there's probably a few others like that. But yeah, I think those are the two that instantly come to my mind when you ask that question.
Yeah, good. And what gives your energy?
You know, when I was a developer, you had these periods where you entered flow and you could like lose track of time, and you were like achieving something and making something, and you just felt so happy, and you don't think about it, but you know, afterwards you realize that those are those moments. And I think as a leader, as a manager, you don't have that kind of creator schedule and a maker schedule. And it took me a long time to feel reward and like energized by some of that. Today, I think it's long-term for me. It's the investment that you make in people and the payoff that you see. And it kind of like, you know, like 3 months later, a year later, and this, you know, you made this change for the person, or you coach them towards a certain way of turning up into work. And then you see that paying off, and, or you have a one-on-one with someone and they say, you know, I did that thing that you said and it just worked so well. That's like the big, you know, energizing moment for me now. And, you know, I accept that they're not like every day, but yeah, I think that's very rewarding for me. And also I think like in nudging an organization over a period of time, where as a kind of a leader, you feel like you're repeating yourself over and over again, saying the same things. And then I think there's two rewards. One is that the language that you insert into the situation to try and nudge things starts to be repeated by others without, like, you know, the same terminology that you introduce. And the second is you see the metrics that you use to you know, track how we're doing actually making it, you know, significantly changing. And those are also super rewarding and energizing.
Oh yeah, this is really good. That made me think of things in a different way just right now. This is really good. I have a question about, of course, what drains your energy, the opposite side of that coin.
You know, the opposite side. So one is like, I think toxic people, and maybe also just people that no matter how much you invest, you can't seem to get them to see the world differently or to change. And I think it's also frustrating for me because I feel like there is probably a way to nudge everybody forwards and into different way of behaving. And I like there's a level of maybe a frustration in me. So that's one. And, you know, like I would say that, you know, we're all different. You know, I'm a big fan of the Clifton Strengths Finder and the idea of each of us having unique strengths that are, you know, in different orders. And my number one strength is belief. And what that means is that it's actually an execution strength. And if I believe in something, I'm going to go after it with all my energy and passion and everything else. And I think one of the things that kills that and drains it and creates bad behaviors in me is where I feel like people don't get why I'm so passionate about that thing and what they should also be passionate about it. And so that can be really like, can be for me at least, that really is a drains me a lot. That's at least things that I think about.
Yeah, I think if you form a club on that, I would join happily. I think you're not alone with that kind of frustration and I kind of belief that yes, we could all get to somewhere different, to a different place, to change our mindset. And sometimes you don't find the way, and it's frustrating. That's true.
I'd just say that when you're energized like that, you want everyone to move fast, and you can't, like, the fact that it's not moving as fast as you want is also like part of that kind of frustration. But you know, then you get these payoffs and boom, you're back in the game and you realize, yeah, we did actually make progress. It wasn't as bad.
Yeah, that's sometimes you need the feedback from others saying, no, but you don't remember how it was 6 months ago. Seems you don't realize the progress we made. You say, oh, okay. Oh, yeah. That was nice. Oh, that's good. You need to do that every 6 months. A small paragraph like this will really help me. You can schedule that in your calendar.
But yeah, I've tried very hard to build a culture where we speak out those things more. And it definitely energizes people, not just me, you know, but yeah, to call out and say thank you and to like call out those little wins, like repeatedly. And like, you know, we now introduce in weekly updates, we actually have that built into it. And we have a bi-weekly kind of all hands just within the product and tech team. And we spend probably 15 minutes of that meeting just thanking people for the last different call outs for the last 2 weeks. So yeah, I think as you build that, and we've only been really introducing more and more of that in the last 6 months, you do start to see it popping up more and more, and then you get a few compliments yourself, and it's rewarding.
Yeah, it's incredible the impact that it has. And it's difficult at the beginning, but I like that way of celebrating. I feel that regular celebration close to when the event happens is really more efficient than the big award ceremony in a way.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, I personally hate big award ceremonies. Because you always have to give awards to some people and you can't give it to all the people who really deserved it. I'm actually really a kind of an anti those. I prefer the continuous kind of call outs and encouragement than like, you know, plaques and awards and things like that. Yeah, at least that's my personal relatively strong belief. Like if I was leading an organization, I definitely wouldn't have something like that there.
Yeah, a question a little bit harder is there something you've always dreamed of doing that never dared to?
Yeah, difficult question. I think I'm quite I've taken quite a few risks in my career, but I did start a company already, but yeah, I'd like to start another company. I'd like to build a real business from scratch or you know, acquire one or do something like that and really build a different kind of business, one that stands for different things in society. You know, I'm very energized to turn up to work to do that. But I think that when you run a company, you can like really shape it in a different way. And, you know, and ideally, you know, more in the sense of like Basecamp or folks like that, where they don't have to, you know, do something specific for their VC, the funders and things like that. They can really grow the company at the pace that they believe it should grow at. And yeah, I think that would be the thing.
This is nice. I love it. I hope you will.
Me too. Me too.
Apart from work, is there something that you're passionate about that you want to share today?
You know, I'm a geek. I'm passionate about lots of things, and like probably like maybe a lot of men, I'm also, my passions, like I would say obsessions, you know, change from time to time. But I do like to get out on my bicycle and go cycling. I really enjoy cycling, and my partner and I are very fortunate also to have a son. He's just about to turn 2 in a couple months. There's definitely like my passion has shifted being a father. You know, that's definitely like where a lot of my energy also goes, and probably why I'm doing a little bit less cycling these days as well, apart from just the pandemic. And I mean, certainly in the lockdown in Paris, we had a 1 kilometer radius that you could leave your home. So cycling wasn't really the, you know, a thing you could do so easily.
Yeah, of course. Of course. What would be really your advice to people who want to develop themselves as leaders?
I think a lot of people who aspire to leadership, there's like getting to being a manager of people is something that they can all achieve and be entrusted with managing a team. And I think that there's clearly certain skills that are needed for that, and they can learn and grow that. But to really push through, to break through kind of up another couple levels, I think that there's a bit more that needs to be developed. And like it goes back to what I said earlier, but I do think knowing yourself, going deeper in yourself, I highly recommend people to take some kind of test like the Clifton Strengths Finder. And there's others like, I think, Colby and a few others. Often people's work will pay for those, or even people have done a bunch of those. You know, I think if one doesn't really work for you, try a few, but like use some of those tools. I think being in the right environment of having the right people around you is super important. And if you're not getting that in the environment that you're in, change it. Find people that are going in the same direction as you and passionate about that. Because I think we take each other on the journey together, and you're not going to really be tested in going deeper in yourself without other people willing to challenge you. And I'm, you know, I would say that like my current team, there are people in there who have challenged me on my behavior, and that's helped me grow. So yeah, I think like going deeper in yourself, and then clearly, you know, like in the kind of executive world, I think there's a couple of things here. One is that you definitely have to be able to deliver results. Ideally, the good kind of execs do that without people paying a price, you know, like taking people with you. Second is just managing the relationships with execs of other departments that are not like directly related to yours, managing the politics and the relationship thing. And you know, those are critical skills, but you can test, you can like every level of your career, you can definitely develop them. But I think it gets a bit harder the more senior you go. And often people get a bit stuck at a certain level. Yeah. And for me, that the breakthroughs come when you need to be willing to move a little bit to like change jobs to get those experiences and get the right people around you, or even to fail and then move again and try again, you know. So yeah, that would be my advice.
I love the advice. Very generous and very tempting advice. I hope that people will be appealed to that, knowing yourself and looking at your environment and look at if the people around you are helping you to grow. I think it's a really, really good one. Love it.
My parents taught me that, Alexei. I just hear their voice at the back of my head or in my head when I'm thinking that, because that's from my parents. Yeah, I definitely learned that from them.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, we learn all the time. And sometimes we remember that the things we learned are coming from a long time ago. It's really good.
Exactly.
Thank you very much, Jeremy, for having joined the podcast today. I really appreciate your time and your insight. That was really beautiful. Really glad that we had that conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Alexei. It's been a pleasure. Yeah, you know, I've been a long time listener of your podcast, so it's great to be here. And yeah, please keep going with the podcast. It's great.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of Le Podcast. Go to alexis.monville.com for the references mentioned in the episode and to find more help to increase your impact and satisfaction at work. drop a comment or an email with your feedback, or just to say hello. And until next time, to find better ways of changing your team.